I was 12 years old, I had an experience that I didn't expect to have that kind of came out of nowhere and would last me a very long time. And it was a long, long time of despair, really. When I was 12, I remember just kind of like, I don't remember what I was doing actually. I think I was just hanging out by myself, playing video games, maybe writing music, whatever. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this severe depression just fell on me. And I couldn't explain it, didn't know what it was. It was actually extremely scary. But out of nowhere, I mean, I was literally left on the floor, curled up in a fetal position, just weeping. And uncontrollably, I couldn't stop. And I didn't know what was going on because, again, I mean, just a moment ago, I was doing just fine. And then all of a sudden, here I am on the floor just crying. And then for several years after that, these bouts of severe depression would come upon me and would just leave me completely immobilized and in utter despair. That came with a couple of attempts, I guess you could say, at suicide. Not by cutting or hanging, but actually through Russian roulette. If you're not familiar with what that is, it's putting a bullet in a gun and basically saying, "Okay, Lord, I'm gonna pull this trigger," and and basically challenging God, pulling the trigger and seeing what would happen. And the despair was severe. It was to the point of me wanting death, longing for death. And it lasted till I was 18. At 18, I was diagnosed with manic depression and bipolar. I was given medication, took it for a little bit. I did not like the way the medication made me feel, so I stopped taking it and, again, continued struggling with depression. My wife and I have been together for 14 years. We're high school sweethearts. We've been married for 8. And we got together. There were several times while we were dating and then while we were married where she would, again, I'd be on the floor in a fetal position weeping, and she would be reading scripture and praying over me, not knowing what was going on, as I was just smiling a moment before, and that depression was just super heavy. After the birth of my first daughter, there were times I'd be playing with my daughter, and all of a sudden I would just be weeping, and my daughter wouldn't know what was going on with her daddy. And that was going on. Even now, there are times when I have those kinds of experiences, but they're very, very short in time span as opposed to them lasting for minutes or half an hour or so as they used to back in the day. And what I'd like to talk about today is depression. It comes in various forms. You have suicidal depression. You have the depression that's not necessarily suicidal, but it still comes with a kind of longing for death. As it's like you would not take your life, you do not want to take your life, but you long to not have life because the depression is so severe, you'd rather it all just end. And then, of course, there's the milder kind of depressions that some people can get due to circumstances or loss, or maybe even something not going your way, such as failing a test or something like that. What I'd like to talk about is I want to go after and kind of spend some time talking about the more severe kind of depressions, not necessarily the suicidal kind of depression, but definitely the kind of depression that is so severe that it leads someone to have kind of a longing for death. I've counseled a decent amount of people who have struggled with that kind of depression. And so what I would like to do is for us to take a look at some scriptures that I've used in those counseling scenarios to encourage saints who struggle with depression. And so the first text that I'd like to take a look at is 1 Kings. 1 Kings, specifically chapter 19. Now, one of the things with depression is that when one is experiencing depression, the idea of isolation is very prominent. They feel like no one can identify with what they're going through, that they are alone in this struggle, that no one will be able to understand or relate. And so they begin to isolate themselves away from community and away from friends and family. And one of the things that's helpful to do is to put things into proper perspective. There is nothing new under the sun, as the scriptures say in Ecclesiastes. And one of the things that we see is that the scriptures itself are familiar with severe depression. Specifically, a certain prophet was familiar with very, very heavy depression. And so I'd like to take a look at the life of Elijah and pull out several principles that can be found in Elijah and his struggle with severe depression. Now, if you're familiar with the narrative, in chapter 18, Elijah is confronted with the prophets of Baal. There's a challenge that's issued, and the prophets of Baal and Elijah go on the mountaintop, and they both offer sacrifices to their God. There's an altar before the prophets of Baal, which number about 400, and Elijah, who's alone. And the prophets of Baal cut themselves. They cry out. They plead for Baal to show up and vindicate the fact that he is the living God. And of course, Baal does not, because he isn't a living God. And Elijah mocks them, and ultimately he calls to heaven for fire to come down and consume the altar to demonstrate that the God of Yahweh is the one true living God. And of course, fire does fall from heaven and actually does ignite the altar, and the God vindicates himself and vindicates his prophet. And so Elijah is coming off of a major victory. And immediately after this major victory that Elijah has had in vindicating himself and the living God, we find chapter 19. And it reads, Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah, saying, "So may the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow." Then he was afraid, and he rose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough. Now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers." And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you." And he arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. Now, so one of the things that we have here in this text is that the kind of a depression that Elijah's experiences is referenced here. It says in verse 4 that after Elijah went another day's journey out into the wilderness and he came and sat down under a broom tree, that he asked that the Lord that he might die. And so the kind of depression, we're not just talking about a kind of casual depression of I forgot to do my homework or I got a bad grade on a test. We're talking about a kind of depression in which Elijah himself wanted to die. Now, within this, there's some things that are kind of curious. This is all happening on the backdrop of tremendous success. That we're finding Elijah kind of in the pits right now. And three things that are very, very critical in this first section here of the text are the following. First, we see that the severe depression is coming about after a tremendous victory in the Lord. When it comes to Christians, many times when you talk to them and engage with them about depression, what you will find is a kind of trend that takes place. That these severe depression episodes, if you would, generally seem to happen after the Lord has done a tremendous victory in their lives. And so usually what happens is there's a tremendous victory that is won in the Lord, and that is followed by a season of depression or a moment of depression. And that is what we're seeing here in the life of Elijah. Again, he just had a tremendous victory, and right after that victory, he is now experiencing this depression. And in the midst of this depression, what we see is he basically goes off into the wilderness. He first has a servant with him and he flees. And so he's afraid and he goes and he runs away. And then he himself decides, again, remember what I talked about in regards to isolation. We have here in verse 19, chapter 19, 4, but he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and he came and sat down under a broom tree. And so what we have here is that he himself, first, after he drops off a servant, he doesn't want his servant around. He's depressed, and what he does is he leaves his servant in one place, and then he travels a day's journey away from his servant into the wilderness so that he may be alone, in a sense, soaking his sorrows. And so again, one of the things you see in this text, and as it relates to depression, specifically Elijah's depression, is the isolation factor. That he wants to escape away from anyone else, and he goes off into the wilderness, and he sat down. And that's when he begins his lament of wanting to die and desiring to die. And now one of the other things you see here in verse 5, it says, "And as he lay down and slept under a broom tree," and then again the Lord comes. But one of the things, and you know, if you've ever experienced severe depression, you know this to be true, is the first thing that he does after he gets into isolation is he lays down and he goes to sleep. That those who experience depression and desire and have this desire of isolation, one of the ways it also manifests itself is wanting to just go to sleep. If you don't want to take your life, but you don't also want to be awake and actually experience or endure the depression. And so you close your eyes and you seek to go to sleep and hopefully sleep it away. And that's what Elijah is doing in this text. He's tired as well because he has just went a day's journey. But all he wants to do is sleep. And the Lord comes and the angel of the Lord comes and touches him and says, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank. And then what did he do? He ate, he drank, and then he went back down and slept again. But the angel of the Lord comes again in verse 7 and says again, a second time he touched him and said, "Arise and eat, for your journey is too great for you." And so a second time the Lord comes, wakes him up out of his sleep, and feeds him. Now this is very important. One of the principles to get away from this as we look at this text is that there's a lot that the Lord wants to say to Elijah. There's a lot of correction, rebuke, and encouragement that the Lord has for Elijah. But before the Lord begins to engage with Elijah on a spiritual level, the first thing the Lord does is he cares for Elijah's physical needs. And when it comes to depression, a lot of things can generally fall off. Everything from hygiene to taking care of yourself, whether it's eating, whether it's sleeping right, whatever the dynamics are, there are physical elements to depression, even when it comes to things such as a thyroid imbalance. Now, I'm not going to get into the chemical imbalances in the brain, which I think is a theory and not proven, and that's in a different episode where we talk about psychotropic drugs and all that kind of stuff. We're not going to get into that now, but there is evidence that a thyroid imbalance, which can be corrected with medication, many times severe depression is the result of an imbalance in the thyroid, that which affects your emotions. And once that balance is corrected, then people can no longer experience depression. And so one of the first things, if I'm engaging with someone who experiences severe depression, especially the kind of depression that kind of just comes on them without any kind of expectation, but it's not like there's something going on in their life providentially, but they just have these bouts of depression, is for them to have their thyroids checked to make sure that there's no imbalances there. Also that they are sleeping well, that they are eating right, that how is their diet, how is their exercise. I would seek to engage with them on all the elements that relate to the actual physical nature of who they are to make sure that they are physically in a good place. And many times what you can find is that people, and whether it's because of the depression or it's led to depression, they haven't been physically taking care of themselves very well. And because they're not physically at an optimum level, that's having emotional side effects. And some of those emotional side effects can very well be depression. But what we see in this text is, again, the Lord is caring for Elijah's physical needs. He gives him water, he gives him food to eat, and makes sure that he's well in the realm of those physical needs. And I think that that's very important. Now, as we go on here, it says here in verse 9, "There he came to a cave and lodged in it. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?' And he said," that's Elijah, "I have been very jealous for the Lord and the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." And he said, "Go out and stand on the mount before the Lord." And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He said, I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And the Lord said to him, Go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria, and Jehu the son of Nimshi you shall anoint to be king over Israel, and Elisha the son of Shaphat of Abba-Meholah you shall anoint to be prophet in your place. And the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death, and the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. And so there's a couple principles that I'd like you to get away from this text. I mean, I think this text is one that is actually really packed heavy with actual really good principles that can be used as it relates to talking about issues of depression, and specifically as God is relating to Elijah. Now, what I would want you to take a look at here with me is how God actually starts this conversation. So we've already talked about how God actually first takes care of Elijah's physical needs to make sure that Elijah's in the right mind, is healthy, is fed, and all those kinds of things. But then after that, and after he has taken care of Elijah's physical needs, God now begins dealing with Elijah's heart. And the first thing that God says is this, and in verse 9, it says, There he came to a cave and lodged in it, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, so this is what the Lord is saying to Elijah, What are you doing here, Elijah? You see, that is a very, very important question. And if you're taking notes or if you're really thinking about this, this is one of the things that I want you to mark down as it relates to depression. One of the questions that you need to ask yourself on the outset, it's good to establish this before you get into a depression, but even when you're actually in a depression and you're actually feeling depressed, you need to ask yourself the question that God is asking of Elijah. Again, and this is the word of God. And what we're seeing in the word of God is there is a word of the Lord that came to Elijah when Elijah's in the midst of severe depression. And so if we're going to think, okay, what would be the best or the wisest thing to ask ourselves when we're there? The best thing to do is say, well, what would God ask us? What is it that God does ask us? And we have here in this text, God actually speaking to those who are in depression, and he's asking them a question. What are you doing here? Think about that for a second. Why would God ask Elijah that? Well, the reason he's asking him that is multifaceted. For one, God is asking Elijah, why is he here out in the middle of nowhere instead of where God called him to be? But also, why are you here? Why are you in this state of depression? You see, what Elijah has seen so far, if we were to go through 1 Kings 19, Elijah has seen the power of the Lord. He called on the Lord for fire to rain down from heaven. And what happened? Fire rained down from heaven. And so the Lord vindicated his holiness and his power and his sovereignty as pillars of fire came down. And so Elijah has already seen the power of God. Elijah has also seen the sovereignty of the Lord. As I mentioned before, in the same scenario, what you see as the prophets of Baal are crying out to Baal, Baal has no power. Baal has no authority. Baal does not exist. And so there is no sovereignty in the God Baal. But with God, who is a sovereign king, Elijah is his prophet. And so God is sovereign over all these false gods. And Elijah is able to see the sovereignty of God as God vindicates his holiness and his kingship through raining down fire and consuming the prophets of Baal. Now, the other thing that Elijah sees is the kingdom advancement of the Lord. You see, God, the kingdom is advancing as the prophets of Baal seem to be kind of taking over the area. That's kind of taking over the land of Judah. And there's this fear that there's no one else there. And so, again, Jezebel and her false prophets are kind of usurping the spiritual health and the spiritual vitality of the nation of Israel. And with that being said, with this whole battle that's taking place between the prophets of Baal and Elijah is an evangelistic opportunity. If the prophets of Baal, fire does actually fall from heaven, then you're going to have more people who are going to be submitting themselves to the prophets of Baal and committing themselves to false worship. However, if the prophets of Baal fail and the prophet of Yahweh succeeds and fire falls from heaven and actually ignites the altar of Elijah, then that is going to vindicate that the prophet of Baal is false and that the king of Israel, the Lord of Israel, is true, and that is going to lead people away from false teaching and a false God to the one true living God. And so what Elijah has seen is God advance his kingdom through vindicating his name through actually raining down fire upon the altar. And so again, in 1 Kings 19, what Elijah has witnessed, he's witnessed the power of the Lord, he's witnessed the sovereignty of the Lord, and he's witnessed the kingdom advancement of the Lord. And so in light of witnessing all those things, God is asking Elijah a specific question. Why are you here, Elijah? What are you doing here? You see, Elijah should be where he was when the word came that Jezebel was after him. It shouldn't have fazed Elijah. Elijah just went against 400 false prophets, and God demonstrated that Elijah was his prophet. And yet Elijah was now doubting the Lord. When that word of his life being in jeopardy came, Elijah doubted and fled. Elijah believed the lie that he was alone. We read later in this verse, we'll deal with that a little bit more. God tells Elijah, and if you look in this text, in verse 18, again, 1 Kings 19, 18, "Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, on the knees that have not bowed to Baal." You see, Elijah believed that he was alone, but in reality, there were 7,000 who did not bow the knee to Baal. But Elijah had already bought into this lie that he was actually alone. And even furthermore, Elijah believed the lie that God himself had left him alone. And so, we see this in the sense that he gets this threat for his life, and instead of believing that God is going to vindicate him, that God is going to justify, that God has his back, he flees as if he does not have the sovereign King of Glory, you know, on his side. And so when it comes to the actual question being asked here, what are you doing here, Elijah? It makes sense why God is asking him, Elijah, this is the last place that you should be in light of the realities in which you have already seen and witnessed. And so one of the things that you want to do, practically speaking, is ask yourself a similar question. When you are experiencing depression, when you are in severe depression, asking yourself, what are you doing here? Have you seen the sovereignty of the Lord? Meditate on that. Have you seen the sovereignty of the Lord? You see, Elijah saw the sovereignty of the Lord, and that led God to ask Elijah, what are you doing here? Well, he was there because he forgot the sovereignty of the Lord. How have you seen the sovereignty of the Lord in your life? Have you seen the sovereignty of the Lord in your life in the sense of your salvation? God won you over to himself. You are not seeking or pursuing after God, and yet God sought after you. And so God is sovereign in salvation, not just of your salvation, but salvation in the world. You've seen the sovereignty of the Lord throughout your life, and specifically throughout your life as a Christian. And so one of the things that you need to do as you're meditating on these is write these things out, like tangibly on a sheet of paper. Write this out. When you're in the midst of depression or you're seeking to prepare yourself, which I think is being proactive is always wiser, write this out. What are you doing here? Why am I here? Why am I depressed? The sovereignty of the Lord. Am I remembering the sovereignty of the Lord? And write out all the ways in which you have seen and recognized the sovereignty of the Lord in your life. Okay? The next thing, kingdom advancement. Have you seen the Lord advance his kingdom? You've seen the Lord save sinners. You've seen the Lord win victories for you through prayer and supplication. You've seen the Lord advance his kingdom in the local church as well abroad. And so write those things down. Another thing that Elijah forgot is that God is going to advance his kingdom. And so reflect on those realities of how have you seen God advancing his kingdom. And then finally, the power of the Lord. You want to reflect on the power of the Lord. Like, the Lord is the Lord powerful enough to save me out of any kind of depression or emotional experience I'm experiencing? You know, these are the kind of things that you want to be reflecting on. Join me in the next episode as we look more at the life of Elijah and the word of the Lord in relation to his depression.